Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
I'm Tim Fitzgerald at GoPowerCat.com.
And I'm Scott Chasen with Fog.net.
This is a replay of WIBW's TV show, The Drive.
Here's this week's episode on the 24/7 Sports Podcast Network.
Good evening, Wildcat and Jayhawk fans, and welcome to The Drive, sponsored by Briggs Auto Group. I am Tim Fitzgerald at GoPowerCat.com, and the man across the studio from me is Scott Chasen. And Scott, I'm just taking some notes here about what I'm going to do when I win the lottery. So give Scott $1 million. Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Fitz. Now, I'll tell you, I didn't have the best Saturday. I would say my Saturday wasn't as fun as Urban Meyer's, but because of that, I think my Sunday is better than Urban Meyer's. And kids, if you don't get that, use Google.
At least he's hanging on to his old Ohio State stuff. That's good. You can interact with us on social media at facebook.com/thedriveshow, on Twitter at @thedrive13, and of course answer our weekly poll question and make your game predictions on our Twitter page. And remember, if you ever miss an episode of The Drive, you can listen to an audio-only version that will appear each Monday morning. It actually goes up at midnight in the form of a podcast at GoPowerCat.com. And we start things off with our two-minute drill. I can't stop thinking about Urban Meyer, but the two-minute drill is sponsored by Vanderbilt's Your Work Boot Center. It was a good band. There was nothing wrong there.
Yeah, well, Fitz, as you predicted, last Sunday, Skylar Thompson played for K-State against Oklahoma. Despite the senior quarterback's outstanding performance, the Wildcats lost 37-31. How close were the Wildcats to taking this one?
They strangely weren't. You know, the final score comes out pretty good, but K-State had a fumble on its first possession. It looked like they were driving for a touchdown. They were clicking along, and a fumble return 55 yards, flips the field. OU gets a field goal. They stopped them from scoring a touchdown. And really, K-State never quite made up for those points. They were kind of chasing it. Then they had a couple empty possessions at the start of the third quarter, which is symptomatic of the program, unfortunately. Oklahoma opened it up. But K-State kept clawing away. Here's what's amazing. The Spencer Rattler was unbelievable in this game. He had three incompletions, and one of them was an interception that you just saw right there. And that interception represented the only non-scoring possession for Oklahoma in the entire game. So think about that. The quarterback's throwing at will. They're scoring points almost every possession, and K-State's not out of it. And in fact, they were able to get it to a one-score possession a couple times. And a couple strange calls, strange overturns by the officiating crew led to some issues for K-State. Scott, overall, this was a good performance by K-State on the offensive side and special teams as Malik Knowles took back another kickoff for a touchdown. Just incredible. Defensively, though, the Wildcats failed miserably. As I mentioned, they could not get Oklahoma off the field without them scoring points. Basically, their solution to getting Oklahoma off the field was to hold them to a field goal instead of a touchdown. And in a weird way, that kept them in touch most of the game. But really, we've seen this three-man front that K-State's running look pretty good through the season. But the last 2 weeks against teams that have a better running offense, it hasn't looked nearly as good. And what I found just mystifying was K-State never flipped to the four-man front like they can do. They stuck with their three-man front that was just getting overwhelmed. They couldn't get enough pass rush. It just was a bad day for the K-State defense. But the offense, with Skylar Thompson back, looked great. We'd heard talk that maybe he wouldn't play, but he did indeed go ahead and play. He wasn't very mobile, didn't run the ball a single time, but boy, he threw the ball as well as he's ever thrown it.
Yeah, Fitz, I was surprised and impressed by how much they let him throw and how much they trusted him. Now, I guess, like you mentioned, part of that is maybe you don't want him running as much, but they really opened up the offense. The offense moved the ball. To me, K-State lost the game in the first possession of the game when they fumbled, not because the game was over then, but to win a game like this, you have to avoid mistakes. You have to kind of be the aggressor. Very rarely do you get back into the game when you get behind. But give K-State credit for this. They fought. They continued to fight all the way. I mean, that kick return for a touchdown. At that point, if you're an Oklahoma fan or coach or player or whatever, you're thinking, what do we have to do to put these guys away? Credit to K-State for that. I thought it was impressive.
What's amazing is rarely can I remember a fumble in the first quarter changing a game to the point where you felt like that, at the end of the day, that decided the game.
Yeah.
And it's happened to K-State 2 weeks in a row. It's just unbelievable. Well, Scott, Kansas fell 59-7 to Iowa State. It was close, though. On Saturday, what was the biggest issue for the Jayhawks? The offense, the defense, the coaching, the bus ride? What went wrong here?
Yeah, it fits all of the above, and some more responsible than others. I'd say the offense probably, you know, bears the brunt of the blame in this one. But this was as bad a first quarter as you can play. Jacoby Bryant there takes a gamble to knock down the ball. Well, there's no help behind the freshman, and he gives up a touchdown. Things went from bad to worse quickly. In fact, it was about 8 minutes into the game when I started researching the worst first quarters in Kansas history. Mm. You have the Jason Bean fumble, which is untouched, reminded me of a play in 2016 when Montel Cozart for Kansas just flat out dropped the ball. You have Brock Purdy running around making plays. This was a guy who had looked, I don't want to say bad, but had, you know, a bunch of turnovers, especially in games against comparable competition, to where, you know, you were wondering why did Brock Purdy come back? You know, if he was just going to kind of do more of the same stuff that had gotten him into trouble. 28-0 was the score of this game at the end of the first quarter. And by that point, Fitz, you knew this one was already over. And, you know, a few things came to mind here as I was sort of looking into the history of Kansas getting into some of these huge deficits. There was a game against Kansas State. I believe it was either Mark Mangino's first season. It was early on, 2002. It ended 64-0. It was arguably the worst defeat Kansas has ever suffered. Maybe not technically on margin, but just by the way the game went. That game was 30-0. It began with a safety. K-State went up 30-0. There was a game against West Virginia, I think, about a half decade ago, where Kansas was behind 28-0 after one, lost 49-0. It was around Thanksgiving. It was a cold winter day, or a late fall winter, early winter, whenever that switch is made. But no one was in the crowd. It was a pretty empty building, a pretty lifeless atmosphere, and the play resembled that. I think this can be different because it was an Iowa State team that was angry, that has already lost so much of what it believed it had to play for coming into the season. But Kansas's offense wasn't good. The Jayhawks made bad mistakes. The defense was really bad at multiple levels. And quite frankly, the coaching decisions weren't great either. I would especially look at the play calling. Kansas has a weird habit of getting into a third and long in field goal range, running up the middle, which you would assume, okay, they're trying to set up a fourth down go for it attempt. Twice they've kicked it right after that. In this case, the kick was blocked. Just a bad performance all around, and one Kansas has to get past in a hurry, although they do get an off week.
Wow, that's 64-0. That was a score at the end of the third quarter. That's how bad that beatdown was. But this was miserable. I couldn't believe the spread was 33. We debated if that was too much.
Yeah.
They almost covered it in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Well, all 10 Big 12 teams were in action this week. We've spoken about two of the games. Scott, who else caught your eye on a busy Saturday?
Well, Fitz, I had a chance to watch a lot of the Texas-TCU game before the local teams got going. And I have to say, running backs in the Big 12 as a whole, there are some really good ones. I mean, Zach Evans, who you see right there, a former five-star recruit. Breece Hall, we, you know, kind of mentioned the KU Iowa State game. But how about Bijan Robinson of Texas? He won this game by himself. I saw some people trying to say, well, no, it was, you know, the offensive line opened up holes. No, if you watch this game, this was a case of Bijan Robinson of Texas getting on the outside, making a guy miss, not going down at first contact, and just plowing past and over and through defenders. Now, I thought Gary Patterson had an excellent game plan in this one. I think he's arguably the smartest coach in the Big 12. I would say he might be twice as smart as some of the coaches and four times as smart if you're asking how smart he thinks he is. But I thought, look, this was a really fun matchup that made me think maybe some of these Big 12 teams are better than I previously gave them credit for, maybe better than I previously thought, just from that perspective of Texas can play with some teams. They've got talent, especially in that running game. And you know what? TCU probably deserved to win. They had a ton of fumbles, lost fumbles. If that doesn't happen, they win this game. So impressed by both teams. Bijan Robinson's awesome, though, Fitz. That was my takeaway.
He is. He just torched K-State at the end of last season. Yeah, the Big 12 is intriguing to me, Scott, because you look at the teams, and I'm not overwhelmed by anyone, and yet you look at what they did, the non-conference schedule, setting aside the Arkansas beat down at Texas.
Yeah.
The Big 12 did really well in non-conference play, so maybe college football as a whole is watered down. We've seen a lot of programs that win a lot of games already lose this season. It's been a weird year.
Yeah, and then, you know, you mentioned some of the other Big 12 games we didn't even touch on. I was scoreboard watching West Virginia. All of a sudden, it's down like 21-0 to Tech, and then mounts a huge comeback. It might have been 17-0 in that one. And how about Oklahoma State starting to figure it out? Fitz, I don't know how good these teams in the Big 12 are, but I'm starting to think there are a lot of good Big 12 teams at least, which is some progress.
All I know is Oklahoma State is tied for first in the Big 12, and they both are 5-0 with Oklahoma. But Oklahoma State's also played two home games. It's very nice that they get to play two home games. Now, a quick look at your poll question results. The poll questions are brought to you by Midland Exteriors. Love the home you live in. Call today for a free estimate.
Well, last week's question was, after Kansas, which Big 12 team that started 0-1 in conference play is the worst? And Fitz, I think you'll agree with the results on this one. 65% of people saying Texas Tech, although, hey, Texas Tech went out and got a win, so maybe not. I don't know.
But I don't understand. Tech was awful the week before, and then they turn around and win on the road.
Yeah, 15% for K-State and Iowa State, 5% for West Virginia.
Okay, here is this week's question. What will be a higher point total? This is a great question, Scott. Iowa State football or Iowa State basketball versus Kansas? Here's your answers. A is Iowa State football with those 59 points. Can the Cyclone basketball team exceed 59 points? Vote on our Twitter page at The Drive 13.
Well, that will do it for this half of the two-minute drill, but we will be right back with more on KU and K-State on The Drive.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to The Drive as we continue our weekly two-minute drill. The two-minute drill is sponsored by Vanderbilt's Your Work Boot Center.
Well, Fitz, K-State is heading into its off week with a 3-2 record, but the Wildcats are already 0-2 in Big 12 play. Give us your forecast for the Wildcats in their final seven games of the regular season.
My forecast is they'll win eight games. Hey, out of those seven, look, this is exactly where I thought this team would be at this point. Now, I didn't know if they're going to lose to Oklahoma State or Iowa State. They're going to beat Iowa State. I feel as confident about that as I have in a long time. They have played two pretty good football teams. One, they went to Oklahoma State. They played on the road with their backup quarterback. Didn't play particularly well and got the loss. They played much better at home in a loss to a top 10 team in Oklahoma. Those might be the two best teams in the conference. Texas certainly has something to say about that, and that's who K-State will play to end the regular season. Iowa State, despite what they showed against Kansas, isn't what Iowa State fans expected this season. They basically played poorly in three games and won blowouts against UNLV and Kansas. I think K-State is poised to make a run in the second half. As Scott mentioned, we're facing an off week for both K-State and KU. And both teams can gather themselves. K-State needs to get a little more healthy, but then they do have Iowa State coming in, and they have a bunch of very, very winnable games from here on out. I think K-State is in a really good position. They are going to have to figure out what's going on the defensive side of the ball and why that three-man front that seemed to work so well in the non-conference isn't working as well now in the conference. Have they put enough stuff on film that opponents can figure out what's gone wrong with it? Essentially, when you go to that 3-3-5 instead of a 4-2-5, you take a down lineman, a defensive tackler, and off the field for an outside linebacker, which is a glorified safety. And it is showing up now with teams running right through that K-State defense. But let's not be fooled to think that K-State played a bunch of has-beens or bad teams in that non-conference schedule. Stanford just beat number 3 Oregon over the weekend. Meanwhile, Nevada won at Boise State. So they actually played some pretty good teams. In fact, I think the non-conference opponents only have one loss outside of playing K-State, and that is pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. But K-State now has to put a better product on the field coming down the stretch of these seven games.
Yeah, reasons for optimism, and hey, if that defense does come along a little bit, at least from where it was against Oklahoma, and I expect it to, I think Kansas State still has everything at once in front of it.
Yep, I agree. Scott, let's give you a break from talking about football. KU basketball held late night in the fog over the weekend. What should fans know about the men's basketball team going into the season, and how was Run DMC?
That's
in my age bracket, kind
of. Yeah, well, I was going to say, if you're one of the recruits attending late night in the fog, Run DMC is not quite the same name as, I'm going to say a few that maybe Fitz doesn't know as well. Lil Yachty.
Oh, yeah.
Any thoughts on Lil Boat, as he's called? But, hey, a different atmosphere for KU. And look, I think there's a lot of optimism and promise with the basketball team. I mean, hey, you saw right there the first highlight, Remy Martin to Cam Martin, no relation, but two newcomers, two transfers into this men's basketball program. There's David McCormick with a dunk, one of the returners that I think fans are really excited about. The way this Kansas team is kind of structured, if you want to say, is with a mix of old and young, with a mix of returners and transfers, and it's a lot of pieces to kind of fit together if you're Bill Self. In fact, when I looked at this late night scrimmage, and every year the late night scrimmage is sloppy. I mean, it's hard to really take anything away because they're not running plays, they're not in their sets, guys are playing with people and playing against people they wouldn't normally be in those situations. But this year's might have been the hardest that I've ever seen in terms of actually taking real takeaways from this team, just because there are 10 newcomers on this squad and there are so many pieces that you don't know how they're going to fit. In fact, Bill Self mentioned on the broadcast, he does some commentary, sometimes very sarcastic commentary, as guys are taking shots they would never take in a real game. He mentioned redshirting as many as two or three players. Now, Kansas has definitely redshirted one in the past. There's definitely been talk at times about redshirting a couple. But if Kansas actually were to redshirt three, which I think is a somewhat reasonable possibility given the super senior kind of impact on this roster, that kind of speaks to the level of depth that you have. So we don't really know how Kansas is going to play yet. I still expect it to be four guards around a big man. I think a lot of David McCormick, a lot of Ochai Agbaji, a lot of Jalen Wilson, a lot of Remy Martin. But from there, you've got 6, 8, 10 guys who are all competing to not be one of the three who redshirt. And I think that's what KU is trying to figure out.
Would your rap name be Lil Chasen?
Lil Chasen, L-I-L apostrophe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'd have to work on that.
Hmm. Okay. Well, now we're going to step out of bounds. And Out of Bounds is brought to you by Copeland Insurance Agency, part of your community for more than 60 years.
That wasn't out of bounds enough, talking about my future rap career. Well, Fitz, let's step out of bounds from the Big 12, or at least the current members. Cincinnati improved its chances at the college football playoff with a win over Notre Dame on Saturday. Is the future Big 12 school in the driver's seat to make the playoff now?
How about that? They really are. I mean, if they don't lose, and they have some challenges ahead once they get into the American Conference. They haven't played a conference game yet, I don't think. But, you know, UCF's pretty good. Houston's actually rounding out to be pretty good. There's some pretty good teams in this conference. SMU's rolling. They'll have some hurdles, but this was the biggest, to go to Notre Dame and win and kind of control the game for the most part, except for a little period in the second half. It's really impressive. Nobody can argue this year that they don't have a serious quality win. This is an undeniable win, and if the committee denies them entrance if they're undefeated, yeah, just blow the whole thing up. This is a really good Cincinnati team. And you know what, Scott? BYU's not bad either. Mm-hmm. They basically should be the champion of the Pac-12 South, and they're not even in the Pac-12.
Yeah, well, look, I think the issue Cincinnati faces is Alabama, Georgia, probably Oklahoma.
Yep.
Okay, so now you're competing for one spot with every other team in the nation. But here's the good news. Clemson's out. I mean, they've already lost a bunch of games. Ohio State already has a loss. Oregon, who beat Ohio State, already has a loss. Okay, like there's that opportunity. Just the one thing I don't want is a one-loss team in one of those conferences getting in, especially if they win a conference championship game over Cincinnati. I want to see them get a shot, but Fitz, I agree with you. I kind of think they're in the driver's seat now to where you win out, you look impressive the rest of the way. I think you're going to the playoff.
Yeah, I can't see them being denied over a one-loss team if they're undefeated. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye on the Big Ten. We've got an amazing game this weekend. I think it's this weekend. Iowa and Penn State. Mm-hmm. I think it's the first time two top five Big Ten teams have played each other undefeated without being Ohio State involved since the 19th century. It was like 1872 it last happened. Now let's hear from our fans, because you don't want to hear from me anymore. Fan question is sponsored by Medlark, supporting people living in their best lives. Our fan question this week is this. Scott, I'm curious, what is the worst Kansas football game you've ever covered? Rachel and Lawrence wants to know this.
Yeah, I can't.
And you have a limited time.
I was going to say, I can't imagine why this question's being asked this week. There have been a few. I think the worst stretch, and this would be my answer, was Kansas lost to Iowa State and TCU back-to-back. 45-0, 42-0 were the two scores from those games. Kansas combined had less than 150 total yards of offense between the two games. The TCU game, I think they had like 21 yards or something like that. It came, I think, right at the end. There was some controversy about whether or not David Beatty knowingly or unknowingly agreed to a running clock. There was like a monsoon going on down there. That, to me, would be number one, but there have definitely been a lot of bad ones to choose from.
That was bad. Well, by the way, to win football games, you need to score points.
You do. And get yards, ideally, although I guess sometimes you could just return the kick for the touchdown. Right. Makes it easier. But remember to ask us your questions on our Facebook page and on Twitter at The Drive 13. And when we return, we will look at our predictions here on The Drive.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back as we head down the home stretch of this week's show. Now it's time to take a look at our predictions. Remember, make your weekly predictions on our Twitter page at The Drive 13. Here are last week's results. The viewers, Ofert, what are you doing, viewers? I went 2-1. Scott went 1-2. 1-2. I'm brilliant. That's basically what we get from that. Now here are this week's picks. We start with Oklahoma -3.5 versus the Longhorns. Scott.
I will go with Texas. Bijan Robinson, kind of already regretting it, but you know what? Give me Texas.
That's cool. I got Oklahoma, and I also regret it.
Next is West Virginia +2.5 at Baylor. Fitz, I don't know what to think of either of these teams. Who do you like in this one?
I'm going to go with the Bears. That's a bear claw.
I think you've done that a few weeks in a row. I like it. Well, I think we should keep that up. I'll go with West Virginia. I don't know how to pantomime a Mountaineer.
And our last game of the week is TCU -1.5 points at Tech. I am taking Tech.
I will take TCU, the battle of the Texas schools that aren't Texas.
That's all the games this week, I think. Again, make your picks on our Twitter page at The Drive 13. Now it's time for our On the Clock segment. On the Clock is sponsored by Carpet One. Buy local for a strong local community. And we start with Scott Jason.
Well, Fitz, if there was a positive from the Kansas football game, and it was a small, small positive, it would be the running game. It would be that Devin Neal and Tory Loughlin continue to produce in that area, and it looks like Kansas has a pretty decent stable of backs. Offensive line is also starting to play a lot better, so that's the reason for hope. Now they have to see if they can go into their off week and get a whole lot better.
Yes, Kansas State has lost twice in a row. Yes, they're 0-2 in the Big 12, but no, not all is lost. There are still a lot of winnable games for the Wildcats. Just stay patient, K-State fans. It's all going to get better here in the second half of the season. I promise. But I've also broken promises before. That's it for this week's edition of The Drive. We'll see you next week right here and all week on social media.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.